Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I am Lori Walsh. Two of Jerry Wilson, author Jerry Wilson's great-grandfathers, made the land run into Cheyenne Arapaho country in 1892. His new novel, Across the Cimarron, delves into the swift and complicated settlement of Oklahoma. Jerry Wilson joins us now in the studio. Welcome to Dakota Midday, sir.
Thank you, Lori. I'm glad to be here.
Now, tell me a little bit about your family history then, because we talked about your great-grandparents. Give us a background for what inspired this book.
Well, this is one of those books that I've sort of been writing all my life in my head ever since the day in 1957 when the great flood of the Cimarron occurred and my great-grandparents died in that flood. And they didn't die very dramatically, but they died, and so it's been in my head all the time. Before they died, I had heard stories about the land run of 1892 from them, and so I, as a student of history and as a writer, I finally decided that it was time to put these pieces together and to try to imagine the life that they lived based on some family stories but also on historical research, and then to tie it all together with this catastrophic event in 1957. So the novel covers two time frames, that day in 1957 and the 65 years between the land run in 1892 and that day.
What kind of family stories did you have access to for research?
Well, fortunately, two of my grandmothers, both daughters of land run pioneers, kept journals and in their old age wrote memoirs, handwritten things of 30 pages or so, in which there was a lot of family history, but also local history, community history. I grew up just across the river from where they had settled, and so the community was familiar to me, but there are certain things that you don't learn from just being a kid there. You have to delve a little bit deeper into the history. Some of the family stories are inspired parts of the plot of this novel, and it's It was a time of struggle. You know, the 1890s was not only a period of great drought, the first Great Depression that the country experienced, grasshoppers, great struggle to survive. And so it was really quite remarkable. But I also learned a lot about the Native American people, the Cheyenne and Arapaho people, who were largely displaced and whose culture was kind of systematically dismantled as a result. And the neighborhood I grew up in was also mixed black and white, poor farmers. And so I really grew up in a sort of multicultural setting, and I tried to incorporate all of that into this novel.
I want to know more about those journals or that information that was left behind. What kind of women were these who wrote down their memories? Were they did they write very factually, or did they tell more stories about things? What did you learn?
You know, I think, for example, one of my grandmothers has a little piece about the last powwow on Spring Creek, which occurred around 1902, something like that. And while her details are sketchy, the whole idea of that inspired me to do some research and see, to learn that, yes, there was a last powwow in that neighborhood, and then to try to not only learn all I could about it, but as a fiction writer, sort of exploit it for the purposes of the plot of the novel.
The characters in this are conflicted and aware of this notion of who's being displaced in different degrees, and to different they come to get different conclusions. Is that coming from your family history, or is that coming from you as a writer to say there's different ways of looking at this than just, you know, we found land, we finally have a place of our own?
I think that largely that's what I learned as I grow older and more thoughtful. I didn't hear much about the Native Americans from my family. I think that There was probably a certain sense of trying to repress what had happened to the Native American people. You know, this was largely free land, but it wasn't free in terms of what it took to gain it and hold it. However, for the Native American population, it was a whole different story. And no, I didn't hear much about that from family or from community. It was something that wasn't talked about much. And so I think over the period of the last 20 years, I've been thinking a lot more about that and knew that that had to be an important part of the story.
Mm-hmm. From the very beginning, we were dropped right into a flood. We're dropped right into some sort of menacing violence during the land run or the preparation to stake a claim. Talk a little bit about violence in this time period and how people kind of endured it or dealt with it.
You know, I'm not aware of a lot of specific violence that occurred during the land run or after. I do know that one of my grandfathers initially made the run of 1889, the first great land run into Oklahoma Territory. And he claimed a place on the Cimarron River, and the next morning woke up with a shotgun in his face. Claim jumper ran him off the land. He had to go back to Wichita and continue working at whatever he could find to do to survive for 3 more years until the next opening. So, you know, there was a lot of that sort of thing going on. Lots of people who made the run were not really interested so much in becoming farmers as they were land speculators, and there were lots of fairly nefarious types. You know, this press is called the Mongrel Empire Press. It's an Oklahoma press, and in recognition of the fact that Oklahoma is really a sort of mongrel empire, that is, people came there from everywhere, but most of the people who did the land runs had in common that they were very poor. They wouldn't have come there if they'd had something somewhere else. So there was a lot of conflict, and that, of course, continued through the years in racial conflict and so on. Another story that one of my grandmothers told me when I was a kid was that she began school in Oklahoma Territory in about 1900, 1901 in an integrated school, but very quickly the territorial legislature outlawed multiracial schools. They instituted segregation. And as a matter of fact, once Oklahoma became a state in 1907, the very first law that the Senate passed, Senate Bill 1, instituted segregation in the Constitution. So that's inherently conflictive. And growing up in a black community, I experienced integration, but not in my early years. Hmm. So, you know, that's a part of the story, too.
Yeah. The river is a character in this story, definitely serves as a character. What was your relationship with the river growing up?
You know, the river, it's usually a lazy river. It's one of those plains rivers that I've waded across it, practically walked across on bare sand in the summertime sometimes, swam in it. But on this particular occasion, it does flood periodically, but on this particular occasion, anybody my age or older who lived in that region, if you talk about the Great Flood, they know exactly the day you were talking about, May 16th, 1957, when that area received about 15 or 16 inches of rain in 24 hours. And upriver in New Mexico, Kansas, and the Oklahoma Panhandle, it was similar. So it was a massive destructive flood that really, you know, I experienced it, and the fact that my grandparents died in it. It was a moment in my life that it was kind of a watershed moment, not to use a pun, but the novel has its inception in that event. So I've been thinking about it for about nearly 60 years since then. So it's really what evolved.
What were the challenges of writing about it? Because the writing of the flood continues in the beginning, yeah, throughout, and it's very descriptive. It's very compelling. It's pulls you right in. It's poignant as you see Reuben and Ruth, the two characters, you know, their love. You get to see their relationship revealed. What was it like as a writer to sort of deal with that, especially with your personal history there?
Well, you know, with this many years having passed, I don't have a whole lot of emotional connection with that event anymore, so I can see it pretty objectively.
I did as a reader.
You did? Well, yeah. That's good. I'm glad that you did as a reader.
I was emotionally connected.
Yes,
so
I'm glad. But I think that's a kind of springboard for telling the story as this elderly couple floats down the river on a piece of debris, trying to get off the river and sort of reliving the previous 65 years since the land run. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a mechanism for telling the larger story.
Mm. How did you handle the details of the flood itself to get the accuracy and the depth of description that you do?
Well, of course, having experienced it, I really had those details in mind, but I did go back and part of the historical research was checking with the Weather Bureau statistics and confirming that my memory was correct about how much it flooded and how many trains went in the tracks and into the river and how many bridges washed out and all that. It was pretty much thoroughly devastating to the whole region.
So how old are you when this happened?
I was 12 years old or 11 years old.
What was your personal memory of it then?
We couldn't cross it for a long, long time, and as a matter of fact, we had to drive more than 100 miles upriver to get across the river to go to my grandparents' funeral. So it was every bridge in the region washed out or the approaches. So it was totally devastating.
For a large number of your family, I'm not sure. How did your parents react?
I think... they are resilient people. Life went on. It was we didn't live immediately on the river, so our land was not immediately affected. We lived a few miles away from the river, but it was a good way to get into this historical epoch, and that's really what I tried to do.
About 30 seconds left. You want to talk about your readings? You're tonight at the Vermilion Public Library at 7 p.m., and then I have Zambros Variety in Sioux Falls this Friday. At 7 p.m. and in between
yes.
there, where are you
and
at?
And then also on May 24th, I'll be at the Willoughby's Emporium in Yankton for their grand opening, part of that celebration.
Perfect. You've been listening to author Jerry Wilson. His latest novel is called Across the Cimarron, and you can see him tonight at the Vermilion Public Library at 7 p.m.